time for overtime.
And I know just the guy to talk to.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Tell me more, tell me more.
Hear from coaches, the players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you. It's the start of hour number two on Overtime. Hope everybody had a great extended holiday weekend. Happy and healthy, celebrating our country's independence. It's now time that we start to count down to the college football season. I'm working my best to check in on all of our area programs, dip our toe into high school coaches as well. Can't wait to break down our area high school football seasons, college football seasons, and more here on Overtime. We'll be checking in with Dakota Wesleyan, first-year head coach, later on this week on the show. Diving in as well to Northern State and our other area schools, Dakota State. And then, of course, week in, week out, we'll preview the season, wrap up a game, preview a game with SDSU, USD, Augustana, and the University of Sioux Falls week in, week out during this college football season that's now less than 2 months away. Still to come, NFL news and nuggets and chatter, and why I believe Joe Burrow should go ahead and be commissioner of the National Football League right now. Great update from him on what he thinks should happen with the NFL expansion to 18 games, an added bye week, and some other thoughts from Joe Burrow, who has proven to be not just a great young quarterback in this NFL, but a pretty free thinker and not afraid to express his opinion. Not necessarily controversial, but definitely very rational for Joe Burrow. We'll break that down coming up here in about 20 minutes. 30 minutes, we're talking all things baseball. We near the All-Star break, 1 week away from the start of festivities, teams and odds. Minnesota Twins awfully slighted in these All-Star break rosters, the All-Star rosters, because Minnesota landed just one player on an All-Star roster that is the least among teams with as good of record as the Twins have so far this year. And based on what we've seen lately out of the batting lineup, out of the pitching crew, Minnesota very much slighted as far as landing players an opportunity to go and represent their league at the All-Star game. The good, the bad, and the ugly to round out the show. And with that, let's dive into your scorecard here on a Monday. Major League Baseball final from yesterday. The Cubs get a weekend ending win over visiting LA 5-0. Cubbies are 42-49. Other winners, St. Louis over DC 8-3. And Miami takes down the White Sox at home 7-4, the final there. The Detroit Tigers keeping pace relatively around where they've been this entire year. They're 15 games back. They're in fourth place. They're going nowhere in a hurry in the AL Central, but they get a big win yesterday in Cincinnati, and they're digging the long ball in the process.
2-2 and swinging a high fly ball right field. Deep, going back, Benson at the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run!
WXYT with the radio call there. New record for Detroit following that 5-1 win in Cincinnati, 42-48 on the season. San Francisco and Cleveland yesterday. The Guardians, no strangers to the long ball either. They get the job done and continue to take the top spot in the Central.
The pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to right. There she goes. A pinch hit. Two out. Three-run homer down the right field line for Bo Naylor.
Cleveland Guardians keep on winning. They're 56-32. Minnesota Twins right on their heels. It might be six games back, but that's not growing anytime soon. Minnesota had a big opportunity yesterday to close the door late, and they met that opportunity with open arms.
Pitch swung on and hit high in the air, deep left field. Dubon is back. He's at the base of the wall. He leaps. It's gone, and the Twins win. Will walk off his former team.
Treasure Island Baseball Network, Minnesota Twins Radio Network with the coverage there. 3-2 the final. Minnesota 51-39. Duran gets his fourth win of the season. He is 4-3. Kansas City beats up on the Rockies in Denver 10-1. And the Milwaukee Brewers demolish the Dodgers on the road. This final 9-2.
The pitch hit in the air to center field. That one carrying back. Páez onto the track, turns around, watches it fly. Goodbye, Christian Yelich. Dead center, two-run home run.
And that made it 2-0 on the day. Final score, Milwaukee 9, the Dodgers 2. Brewers are now 53-38. Pretty light slate today from across Major League Baseball. It begins at 3:05. Cardinals visit the Nationals in D.C. Tigers play host to the Guardians, 5:40 start time on Fox Sports 1. Rockies at Reds in Cincinnati, 6:10 the start time. Twins open a series against the White Sox, 6:30 the pregame coverage, 7:10 the official start time. Listen to Twins baseball all season long right here on ESPN Sioux Falls. The All-Star break begins a week from today. That'll last all the way till Friday when play resumes for the second half of Major League Baseball season. One of many first-time All-Stars, a big list of those guys to be announced later in the show. Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette talking up Paul Skeens and what he does that makes him so darn different at such a young age.
Paul Skeens has been absolutely electric. I've watched every one of his starts, most of them in person. We saw him make a path through the minor leagues very quickly, and he's just not, I don't know how you say it, just he's undaunted. You know, nothing has gotten in this kid's way. He's got velocity, but it's not just velocity. He's got five or six pitches. He's got this thing called the splinker that's basically a splitter thrown really hard, sinking fastball hybrid that has been downright unhittable.
Skeens is one of many first-time All-Stars. Right now, his Pittsburgh Pirates sit third place in the NL Central with a record of 42-47. Brewers in command of that division, five games better than the Cardinals at present with a record of 53-38. NBA news, we talked a little bit last hour about Steph Curry and Steve Kerr talking about the departure of Klay Thompson from the roster. Here's the coach on how things will look very different next year.
When the season starts next year, it's going to be really weird. And I know we're all going to have that date circled when he comes back to Chase. And that will be one of the strangest, most emotional nights of all of our careers, for sure.
Been a pretty fun offseason thus far for the NBA. NBA draft is in the rear view. The start, the big first wave of free agency. We're getting transactions just about every day. Nothing crazy major to report on. But certainly you can divvy it up, talk it up any way you want right now as to who has had the best offseason, whether it be the team, the Philadelphia 76ers, other squads that have added marquee talent, squads that have managed to retain talent like the Orlando Magic, also on that short list. But as far as individuals go, here's what Jonathan Zaslow of ESPN Radio has to say in regards to what individual has had the best offseason this year.
LeBron James has had the best offseason. Better offseason than anyone. If somebody wants something and they get all of it, isn't that a great offseason then? He wanted J.J. Redick as the coach, his wine-drinking pal, his podcast partner. He's his coach. He wanted his son to get drafted by the Lakers. Even though he may not be an NBA player, his son got drafted by the Lakers. He wanted to get a new contract, a lot of money. He got a new contract and a lot of money. He got everything he wanted. His MO is not necessarily what's best for the Lakers. It's what's best for LeBron James and the James family, and he got everything he wanted. No one has had a better offseason than LeBron James.
LeBron James did not get everything he wanted. He didn't get Klay Thompson, didn't get Paul George, didn't get anybody else marquee from the market to land on the LA Lakers roster. He got his son, got Dalton Connect, got his coach. Certainly the wish list has more checks than empty boxes, but not a perfect offseason for LeBron James, but certainly on the list of players that have had a good offseason from across the NBA. WNBA Finals, three games final yesterday. Vegas over Dallas, 104-85. Chicago lost in Seattle, 84-71, and Phoenix wins on the road in L.A., 84-78. Nate Tibbetts and company, 11-10 on the season. No games tonight in the WNBA. Next up tomorrow night, Lynx are in action against the Sparks on the road. That's a 9 o'clock jump time. NFL news to get to. Tragic news over the weekend. The Minnesota Vikings rookie cornerback Kyree Jackson passing away along with two other ex-high school teammates in a weekend crash that's still under investigation. Here is some of the latest in regards to the details of the accident that claimed the lives of three.
The crash happening Saturday morning in Maryland just after 3. Police say an Infiniti, allegedly driven by Corey Klingman, attempted to switch lanes while speeding, slamming into two cars, including a Dodge Charger with Jackson and his two high school teammates and former college football stars Isaiah Hazel and Anthony Lighton Jr. inside. According to police, that Charger then careening into several tree stumps. Jackson and Hazel pronounced dead at the scene. Lighton died at the hospital.
Absolute tragedy over the weekend. Kyrie Jackson, 24-year-old Minnesota Vikings rookie cornerback, passing away in that accident, as well as two former high school teammates and college football players. Now on to the NASCAR world. Alex Bowman won the street race over the weekend in Chicago. Tyler Reddick was second. Ty Gibbs third. Next up, the races at Pocono on Sunday. 1:30 broadcast start time on USA Network. PGA Tour Golf, the John Deere Classic wrapped up from Illinois. Davis Thompson, what a way to win your first ever PGA Tour title. He wins at 28 under par, three-way tie for second, was 24 under par, so four strokes better than the rest of the field for Davis Thompson. Luke Clanton, the amateur, who was near the top of the leaderboard in last week's event, was also part of that three-way tie at 24 under par. Definitely a young man to keep your eye on moving forward. Next up for the PGA Tour, the Genesis Scottish Open, running Thursday through Sunday. Wimbledon Finals, Emma Navarro, get to know the name. 19th rated woman takes care of Coco Gauff in straight sets yesterday from Wimbledon, and she says she's very excited to continue her advance in the tourney.
I'm hearing it for the first time, and I can't really wrap my head around it right now. Hopefully sleep on it by the morning. It'll feel more real than it does right now. But really proud of the match I played and the courageous tennis that I was able to play. And it's unbelievable to be in this position.
Again, the American Emma Navarro, straight set win over fellow American Coco Gauff, the second rated player in the world, 6-4, 6-3. Other finals from yesterday, Paolini over Madison Keys withdrew in the third. Lulu Sun took down Emma Raducanu, 6-2, 5-7, 6-2. Raducanu was the final Brit on either side, men's or women's in the single side. No more Britain natives in the field at Wimbledon. Today, Alina Svitolina took down Quinn Yu, 6-2, 6-1, and Rybakina took down Kalinskaya, withdrew in the second set. On the women's side right now, the other final that we have yet to mention, Helena Ostapenko picking up a straight set victory, and still to come on the women's side, one other match going on today. It's Krejcikova and American Danielle Collins. That is a 12:10 projected start time, so should be getting underway right now. You can catch it on ESPN2. On the men's side, Yannick Sinner took down American Ben Shelton in straight sets yesterday, 6-2, 6-4, 7-6. Medvedev advances with a withdrawal victory over Dimitrov. Alcaraz over Humbert in four sets. And American Tommy Paul advances past Roberto Bautista Agut yesterday. And today, in action right now, Taylor Fritz will not go away. But Zverev in a tiebreak in the fourth set right now. Fritz won set three to stave off elimination. Get you the latest here as they're now going to commercial. But other finals from today, Lorenzo Musetti picks up a win in four sets. And Alex de Minaur, a four-set victory over Arthur Fils as well. Still to come, Novak Djokovic and Holger Rune. That's the 2-seed and the 15-ranked player in the world. 12:15, the projected start time, minutes away on ESPN. Zverev and Fritz into set four. And at last check, Fritz well ahead in the tiebreak of that set. So we'll keep you updated on the scores from Wimbledon as we reach the conclusion of both tournaments, men's and women's singles, at the conclusion of this coming weekend. Into your ReliaBank headlines of the day now. Vikings rookie cornerback Kyrie Jackson and two former college football players were killed in a car crash overnight on Saturday, according to Maryland State Police. Jackson was just 24 years old, died in a three-car crash that occurred at 3:14 a.m. on Saturday in Prince George's County, according to police. The other victims, Isaiah Hazel and Anthony Lytton Jr., two former players who were also high school teammates of Jackson's, were also killed in the crash. Hazel, 23 years old, played at Maryland and UNC Charlotte, and Lytton, 24, played at Florida State and Penn State most recently. Police say that Hazel was driving a Dodge Charger with Jackson in the passenger seat when their car was struck by an Infiniti Q50 attempting to change lanes at a high rate of speed. The Charger left the road and struck multiple tree stumps that night. And again, three killed in a tragic accident over the weekend, all still under investigation right now. For the latest, ESPN.com, VikingTerritory.com. Dustin Baker also an article up right now. The Minnesota Timberwolves season may have ended on a low note, according to some, but Anthony Edwards' confidence is still very, very high. The 22-year-old superstar was asked yesterday about his role with Team USA at the Paris Games, where he'll play alongside stars LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant. I'm still the number one option, Edwards said. Y'all might look at it differently, but I don't. Edwards, who led the Timberwolves to the Western Conference Finals before losing 4-1 to the Dallas Mavericks, has not been shy about self-promotion of his strengths throughout 4 years of his professional play, but he has delivered on his words with strong performances, averaging nearly 26 points per game, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists last year. He's also the youngest player on Team USA, but that's not stopping him from believing he will play an active role when the games begin on July 26th. I just go out there and be myself, shoot my shots, play defense. They got to fit in and play around me. That's how I feel. You love the confidence. Yes, it's arrogant, but you love the arrogance when you deserve it. And when you're that darn good at such a young age, you got to play that way. You got to think that way. Have that mentality. I don't care what you say about Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, whoever your GOAT is in any sport. They have that arrogance to them. They have the chip on the shoulder. I'm the best in the world. Do something about it. I love that from Anthony Edwards as he partners with a ton of superstar talent on Team USA for the upcoming Olympics. One news item that we haven't gotten to just yet. UConn coach Dan Hurley bypassed a 6-year, $70 million offer to head to the LA Lakers. He says, no thanks. I'm happy where I'm at. I'm going to try to go for a three-peat and continue to build this program, continue to be the marquee coach in college basketball, and as of today, he'll be paid as such. UConn men's basketball coach Dan Hurley has agreed to a new 6-year, $50 million contract through the 2029-2030 season. This was announced this morning. Hurley has the opportunity to receive performance incentives throughout the course of his contract. He receives the deal after turning down that offer to take the Lakers head coaching job, 6 years, $70 million. They opted to go with J.J. Redick in the wake of that. Hurley has led UConn to back-to-back national titles and is 141-58 as the coach of the Huskies. So yeah, 6 years, $70 million in the NBA sounded good. 6 years, $50 million to do what you've been doing, to love what you've been doing, to build the young men up there in stores and beyond, and do it in the way that is so unique to UConn right now. It's so different based on everything we've seen over the last 5 years, decade plus, in the world of men's college basketball. It's not a bunch of transfer portal kids melded together. Hey, we're going to go win this thing. It truly feels like foundation building. And anytime you get the candid interviews with Coach Hurley, not the pregame, postgame things, but I'm talking the midweek, the sit down, the podcast, whatever, the way that that man thinks and the way he attacks recruiting and player development and relationships with families on the floor, it's very old school. And I am all for it in terms of the future of collegiate athletics. UConn and head coach Dan Hurley, 6-year, $50 million contract, $20 million difference over 6 years. But if you're asking Coach Hurley, I'm sure he's perfectly fine to go ahead and eat that $20 million performance benefits in there as well, and all sorts of opportunity ahead of them to continue to put their stake and stamp in the premier college basketball program in our country right now. That's the UConn Huskies and head coach Dan Hurley. Things were not going well for Coco Gauff against Emma Navarro at center court. Not well at all. And she kept looking up at her guest box for help from her coaches. One of them, Brad Gilbert, would stand up and gesture and they would talk back and forth, but did not fix what the issues were. Gauff has yet to make it past the fourth round at Wimbledon as she exited the stage again on Sunday, eliminated in straight sets by fellow American Emma Navarro, 6-4, 6-3, in an all-American matchup. We had the game plan going in, and I felt that it wasn't working. I don't always ask for advice from the box, but today was one of those moments where I felt like I didn't have solutions. Gauff, the reigning U.S. Open champion and number 2 seed at the All England Club this week, had this to say moving forward. Mentally, it was a lot going on, and I just felt like I wanted more direction. Hers was the latest in the series of departures by top women from the Wimbledon bracket this year. Top-seeded Iga Swiatek lost on Saturday. Third seeded Anya Sabalenka withdrew from an injured shoulder before playing a match. And number six, Marketa Vondrousova, was defeated in the first round. So everything is open. Everything's in front of Emma Navarro. She'll see Paulini next round. But it's a lot of fun to see all the women, men, or the American women and men still alive in their respective matches. And by the way, Taylor Fritz did win the tiebreak in the fourth set. So we're on to a decisive fifth set between Fritz and Zverev right now, ESPN TV. Right now, the set scores go like this. Zverev took sets 1 and 2, 6-4, 7-6. Set 3, 6-4 in favor of Fritz, and a 7-6 tiebreak victory to stay alive for Taylor Fritz in set number 4. And we're early on in set 5, 1-1 the score. Check it out right now, ESPN TV. Lastly here, as we round out your ReliaBank headlines of the day, the All England Club isn't quote-unquote worried about fans skipping Wimbledon because of England's run in soccer's European Championship. The rain is another story, though. Week one attendance at Wimbledon was down nearly 4% from last year as rain interrupted play on several days at the grass court Grand Slam. Friday's attendance was the lowest for a first Friday, excluding the pandemic, since 1998. A total of 36,630 fans attended on Friday when rain delayed the start of play by 2 hours and also stopped matches from being played on outside courts in the evening, excluding 2021. That was the lowest for a first Friday since 34,945 were in attendance back in 1998. Little bit concerning, couple different factors. Do I think rain is that big of a deal in terms of keeping people away from the event? I don't believe it is. I really don't. And I might be on the outskirts there on the wrong side of things, but I certainly believe if you got the opportunity to go to Wimbledon, you're going to go rain or shine. You're going to sit out there. Who cares if you get wet walking around? I don't think it's that big of a deal. But Wimbledon and the officials there saying the rain does play a little bit of an impact in terms of where they're at. But down roughly 4% from last year in terms of attendance at Wimbledon. And lastly here, I told you Emma Raducanu is out. She's been knocked out of Wimbledon after suffering a 3-set loss to New Zealander Lulu Sun. As of yesterday, Sun won 6-2, 5-7, 6-2, securing herself a spot in the quarterfinals. Despite losing, the match marked the furthest that Raducanu had progressed in a Grand Slam since winning the U.S. Open back in 2021. And the 21-year-old, who missed last year's tournament after undergoing surgery on both wrists and an ankle, has been impressive in form on a grass court and has not dropped a single set in her first three matches. However, Raducanu struggled with Sun's pace throughout the game, failing to secure the first of her opponent's powerful forehand, proved too much of a challenge for Raducanu to overcome. And again, no British players, men's or women's, still alive in the singles right now at Wimbledon. The women's side, by the way, way more fascinating right now, just based on what has happened, the seeds that have exited, and everything in between. You still got Sinner and Djokovic alive on the men's side, and a lot to look forward to continuing coverage of Wimbledon. And by the way, tomorrow we'll be talking with Kenny Ducey a little bit more about the headlines, the women's side, the parity out there, and everything you need to know gearing up for the final weekend of Wimbledon here in 2024. We'll take the break. Back talking football, and more football. Joe Burrow with some candid comments about the future of the National Football League schedule, an update on Dak Prescott's recent injury, and more. It's all next on Overtime.
You want more of Overtime? It's all on the podcast. Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
You guys have been around the show long enough that I'm going to inject football each and every day if I can. You know that, and that's where we're going now here on this Monday edition of Overtime. In case you wanted to feel a little bit old today, this one doesn't make me feel too old because this guy's been out of the league for a while, but outside linebacker LeVar Arrington II, the son of former Penn State All-American and great 7-year NFL veteran LeVar Arrington, announced his commitment to play at his dad's school, Penn State, on Thursday. Arrington II hails from Covina, California, and is a two-way standout at Charter Oak High School, where he finished with 65 tackles and 12 sacks During his junior year last fall, the 6'2", 210-pound defender held offers from the likes of Michigan, Washington, and Colorado, and commits to his father's alma mater following spring visits to Penn State, Tennessee, and UCLA. The elder Arrington authored a career worthy of the College Football Hall of Fame with the Nittany Lions from 1997 to 1999, where he emerged as one of the nation's fiercest linebackers and became known for the LeVar Leap. Arrington totaled 173 total tackles, 19 sacks, and 3 picks on the way to back-to-back All-America selections back in the late 1990s, including unanimous honors in 1999. LeVar Arrington II will also be a Penn State Nittany Lion. Now on to some NFL news. Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott, fire up the debate cannons, fire up all of the rumors, recently suffered a minor right foot sprain that temporarily required a walking boot. That's according to ESPN's Todd Archer. Prescott was seen in a walking boot while on vacation in Cabo San Lucas in a picture posted to Twitter on Wednesday. It was unclear when the picture was taken, as Prescott is no longer wearing the boot. The injury is not expected to impact Dak when the Cowboys hold their first training camp practice on July 25th, and it is not known how Prescott suffered the injury. The Cowboys last held OTA workouts on June the 5th. Prescott, of course, all of the drama, all the intrigue, and all the leverage against the Dallas Cowboys. He's entering the final year of his contract, which will pay him $29 million for the upcoming season. Not good enough for one of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL. Maybe not a top five guy. And for you Cowboy haters out there, you're probably screaming at me. Maybe not a top 10 guy. I've got Prescott in my top 10, though, based on where he's been throughout his career. One of the guys that, in my opinion, is a top 3 guy, top 2 guy, is Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. And he said, and started to just spit knowledge and facts here on Pardon My Take in an interview with the Barstool Network show. He says, roughly, according to Ari Myrov on Twitter, that if the NFL goes to 18 games, there should be 2 bye weeks. That's already been reported, and Burrow's already co-signed on that in the past. But he did suggest something else in this appearance that is a little bit different and very commonsensical. Suggests that one of the byes should be around week 13 for the entire league, with the Pro Bowl festivities held that week, similar to the NBA's All-Star Weekend. Burrow believes this would boost ratings for the struggling All-Star game. And additionally, by adding a second bye week and an extra game, the Super Bowl would fall a week later, the Sunday before President's Day, giving most of the country a day off after the biggest game of the year. The comments trickling in, people saying, can he be commissioner right now? Certainly a lot of imagination, certainly a lot of common sense from Joe Burrow there. Lastly, same appearance, different topic. Burrow did go on to talk about himself personally ahead of this season, where the Bengals are and where the narratives are with him and that division. First off, he was asked about how the division finishes. He says, Bengals won. I don't care how the rest of it finishes. Heck of a response there. Burrow said, though, that he's planning to offer a strong reminder about what he can do come this fall. Burrow says, that's what happens when you get hurt, though. You don't play football. People forget about you if you're not out there and people aren't watching you. Then there's nothing to talk about. I'm going to give people something to talk about this year, and I'm excited about the opportunity. Injuries have been the only thing really to slow Burrow down since he took part in the league as the number one overall pick recently, which is why he's prioritizing his availability heading into this year. The Cincinnati Bengals are a sleeper. Jerry P., Thomas Lee were in here last week. I was talking about a team that's not the Kansas City Chiefs, the Niners that you predict will win the Super Bowl. I had the third pick among the teams, and I went with the Bengals. I think it was the Lions, and before that, Jerry P. Went with, oh man, I'm trying to remember where Jerry went with his pick, but Thomas definitely took the Lions as far as his pick for the Super Bowl winner. Baltimore Ravens is where Jerry went. Smart pick there. But I like the Bengals a lot. They lost Joe Mixon. They got their receivers back. We'll see. T. Higgins will likely ball out in a contract year, and Joe Burrow back. If he's healthy, I think he's the second best quarterback more often than not in the National Football League. And by the way, I did look it up, MVP odds right now, just to get an idea of where Joe Burrow might land. Patrick Mahomes is the odds-on favorite, plus 450. Josh Allen, stat compiler aficionado, plus 850. C.J. Stroud, tied for second, same odds as Josh Allen. Then you got Joe Burrow at plus 900, and Jordan Love, Green Bay Packers quarterback, fifth best odds. Rounding out the top 10, Lamar, Brock Purdy, Aaron Rodgers, Jalen Hurts, and the aforementioned Dak Prescott right now playing in a contract year. That's the latest from the world of football, college football, and the National Football League. We take the break, come back with Major League Baseball All-Star Game talk. We got the rosters and a lot of first-timers out there, Paul Skeens and others. How did the Minnesota Twins do? Not so good. We'll break that down and more coming up next. Twins are slighted, the latest on the teams and the odds moving forward as we get close to the All-Star break in Major League Baseball season. Who are the favorites to win the World Series right now, and do they still value the Minnesota Twins as a top 10 team? We dive into it all coming up next on Overtime.
Stream us on streaming now, Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on the Monday edition of Overtime. Looks like American Taylor Fritz might just maybe do the impossible comeback against Alexander Zverev of Germany. Was down 2-0, down 4-6, 6-7, took set 3 and 4, and right now is up a break in the decisive fifth set against the fourth-ranked Zverev. And Taylor Fritz, the 13th-rated American overall in this Wimbledon tournament, looks to be making his way all the way back. Up a set right now, up a break rather, excuse me, in set number 5, 4-2. Find it right now on ESPN TV. News from Major League Baseball before we dive in to the list of first-time All-Stars and the slighting of the Minnesota Twins. The Twins reinstated Chris Paddock from the 15-day IL today, and the right-hander is scheduled to start for the team tonight against Chicago. In a corresponding move, the Twins did option right-handed pitcher Josh Winder to AAA St. Paul. The 28-year-old Paddock landed on the injured list back in late June with right arm fatigue. Is 5-3 with a 5.29 ERA across 15 games this season. 27-24, 4.42 ERA in 83 career appearances with the Padres and with the Twins. The Chicago Cubs will be without right-handed pitcher Colton Brewer for a while. He goes on the 60-day injured list because of a broken left hand that occurred in the worst, dumbest way possible. He punched the dugout wall in frustration the day prior. Brewer entered Saturday's game in relief of starter Kyle Hendricks in the third, with the Cubs down 2-0 to the Angels. He got just 2 outs before being lifted and was charged with 3 runs, 1 earned on 2 hits, 2 walks, and a hit batter. The Angels went on to win the game 7-0. Brewer told reporters on Sunday, "My intention wasn't to break my hand." Really? I don't think anyone wants to break their hand. He goes on to say, "I'll get frustrated and make mistakes. That's no excuse. There's a lot to prove out there that I'm willing to do. Stuff like that. Emotions get the best of us sometimes. Punching a wall, punching anything harder than your fist is never a good idea, people. Especially when you're a pro baseball player that throws the ball for a living." 60-day IL for Cubs right-handed pitcher Colton Brewer punching a wall, broken left hand on Saturday, and now on the 60-day injured list. The rosters for the upcoming All-Star game, the All-Star festivities, the All-Star break officially begins on Monday of next week. The All-Star game will feature 32 first-time All-Stars and 19 players under the age of 27. According to ESPN.com, it's a fitting snapshot for a sport skewing younger and younger as the years go by. The American League and National League pitchers and reserves were announced on Sunday for the July 16th exhibition at Globe Life Field held down in Arlington, Texas. And again, the group of first-time All-Stars named on Sunday includes stars such as Kansas City Royals shortstop Bobby Witt Jr., Cincinnati Reds shortstop Ellie De La Cruz, San Diego Padres rookie outfielder Jackson Merrill, Oakland Athletics closer Mason Miller, and Pittsburgh Pirates rookie right-hander Paul Skeens. Skeens said to teammates in the clubhouse after being told of the news from his manager Derek Shelton, "This is cool, and I'm just grateful for all of you guys. Since the first day I've been here, I've been a part of the team. I couldn't have done it without you." neither roster this year has a player with double-digit all-star appearances. Royals catcher Salvador Perez named in a reserve to the American League team, and Houston Astros second baseman Jose Altuve, elected an AL starter by fans, lead the pack with 9 selections apiece. So it's definitely a young group this year for the All-Star game. Again, 19 players under the age of 27. Moving forward, the Phillies, owners of the best record in the majors for most of the season, are better represented than any team. They've got 7 players, 4 of them, all pitchers, were named to the NL team on Sunday. Zach Wheeler, Ranger Suarez, Matt Strom, and Jeff Hoffman. So 7 for Philadelphia. Minnesota Twins are not one of the top teams this year, but they're awfully slighted here. Of the 15 teams with 1 representative in the All-Star game this year, the Twins, who had shortstop Carlos Correa named an AL reserve on Sunday, the Twins own the best record of any team that has just 1 player selected. The Mariners, sitting in first place in their division, also have just 1 all-star, right-hander Logan Gilbert. First baseman Pete Alonso, 2-time home run derby champion, was the Mets' only player chosen. So the Twins are not alone, but among players teams with their record, they're the most slighted. So Philly has the best record in baseball. It's had one of the best records throughout the season. They've got 7. Twins have just 1. And based on what their bats have been able to do lately, and certain pitchers have been pretty darn good this year for Minnesota, it feels awfully slighting that Minnesota just has 1. And of course, it's the most popular player, most recognizable player on the roster from the national circles in 1, Carlos Correa. So it begs the question, where are the Twins now as far as odds go for the World Series? We're 1 week away from the All-Star break. Minnesota still tied for 7th. They've been hanging around this spot for quite some time. Cleveland is 6th in the odds right now. Dodgers at plus 320, Phillies at plus 500, Yankees at plus 550, Orioles at plus 650, and then the Braves at plus 900. Cleveland, Houston, Minnesota, Seattle, and the Brewers round out the top 10. Kansas City Royals, the 11th best odds to win the World Series right now at plus 4,500. All these odds courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. And again, that's the latest from the world of Major League Baseball. Certainly a lot to look forward to for the All-Star break. Paul Skeens, hopefully going to put on a show there in Arlington as well. People arguing that he should be the team starter moving forward for the All-Star break. I hope that's true. So much pizzazz and a different approach than we've seen in recent years for young pitchers across the board. An absolute stud during his time for the Tigers of LSU. We're going to come back and wrap up the show. It's just about time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. A lot to choose from over the weekend. We'll dive into it all to round out the show next on this Monday edition of Overtime.
Miss a moment of local college and pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for Overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you to round out this Monday edition of Overtime. Thanks for spending a portion of your week with us right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. We're going to deliver the good, the bad, and the ugly here in just a moment, but time now to give credit where credit's due. How about Taylor Fritz? First win against a top 5 opponent in a major as he takes down Alexander Zverev. Was down 2-0, comes all the way back, survives a tiebreak in set 4, dominant 5th and final set for Taylor Fritz. He gets the job done. He's moving forward, and again, those set scores 6-4, 7-6, and they just took it off the screen. But either way, you know he was down 2-0, and Fritz comes all the way back to win it against Alexander Zverev, and it gave me a little bit of pause to look up the odds there for Wimbledon. The men right now, Sinner is the odds-on favorite, plus 140, but there's a lot of challengers right there on the men's side. Alcaraz there at plus 250, Djokovic sitting there at plus 320, and then Taylor Fritz is already into the top 4 with plus 1,000 odds, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. On the top 5, Holger Rune there at number 5. Women's side, it's really anyone's tournament right now, but they believe Rybakina is the player to beat. Elena Rybakina plus 110 to win it. Emma Navarro, the American, fresh off the upset victory over Coco Gauff, plus 400. Ostapenko 3rd, Vekic 4th, and Svitolina 5th in the latest odds. Jasmine Paolini plus 1200. And American Danielle Collins plus 1,400, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. That's good news ahead of the good, the bad, and the ugly for the Americans at Wimbledon. And now, let's give you today's edition of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Who has been the problem child today? Displayed their ugly side. Whined a bit too much and now setting a bad example. Well, Bert is calling out today's headline makers with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Speaking of big-time wins, Davis Thompson had been working toward a moment like he had yesterday, and he wasn't about to let anything stop him. Not a soft golf course that produced the best scores of the week. Not the pressure of trying to win for the first time on the PGA Tour. He started with a two-shot lead, six holes in to the final round on Sunday. Thompson had five birdies, had stretched his lead to six shots, and was on his way to a four-shot victory, a spot in the next three majors, and the lowest 72-hole score ever in the John Deere Classic. I'm just thankful it worked out, the 25-year-old says. I got off to a great start today and was able to just kind of cruise on the back nine. Getting off to a good start was crucial, and I was just able to ride the momentum coming in. The 25-year-old made a 45-foot birdie putt on the first hole to extend the lead to three shots, and no one got closer to him the rest of the way. The victory gets him into the next three majors, starting with the Open in 2 weeks at Royal Troon. It also make his Masters debut next April. Thompson is the 24th player to get his first PGA Tour win at the John Deere Classic from Silvis, Illinois, the most of any tournament dating back to 1970. We told you it was decision time for Macklin Celebrini late last week. He's made his decision 8 days after taking him with the number one pick. The San Jose Sharks signed Macklin Celebrini to his entry-level contract on Saturday. The 18-year-old said before and after the NHL draft that he wanted to consider all of his options when it came to his next step. The options were head to the NHL or stay a part of the Boston University program for a sophomore season. He ultimately chose the NHL, and with it, the opportunity to establish himself as a top-line center while simultaneously serving as the face of a franchise's rebuild there with the San Jose Sharks down in California. The early consensus number one pick, Celebrini's lone season at Boston University, reinforced the belief that the franchise that had won the NHL draft lottery would be getting the first rights to draft a player considered to be a franchise cornerstone. Celebrini was a 17-year-old freshman at BU, finished with 32 goals and 64 points in 38 games, led the Terriers in goals and points en route to them finishing with a 28-10-2 record, and Boston would lose to overtime to Denver, which won their 10th national title, the most in men's college hockey history. Other good news, other historic news, Asia Wilson continues her resurgence, and the Las Vegas Aces aren't going anywhere fast. They had a slow start to this year, but that's all in the rear view now. Asia Wilson scored 28 points and became the franchise's all-time leading scorer yesterday in the win against the Dallas Wings, 104-85. Wilson also grabbed 10 rebounds. That is her 11th double-double of the season, was 11 of 22 shooting from the field and 3 for 4 from downtown. Top selection back in 2018, now has 4,301 career points and moved past Sophia Young Malcolm for the all-time team mark. Also has 540 points this year, the most by any player over a 20-game span within a season in league history. And again, Las Vegas Aces started out a little bit sluggish on the season. I believe they were 5-5 or 6-5 early on. That has all changed as Las Vegas continues to boost their mark. I think I've got it written down here. Las Vegas now on the season 13-7. And again, Asia Wilson, 28 points and 10 rebounds on the season. On to the bad news, rookie Bronny James, and all the scrutiny is going to come pouring in before too long, if not already. He was held out of Sunday's Classic Summer League game in San Francisco because of trace swelling in his left knee, keeping James out of the loss to Golden State. The second day of a back-to-back is considered precautionary by the team. James is expected to play in Wednesday's final Classic game against the Miami Heat. The hope is and the plan is for him to play the next game here, but that's all the information we have so far. Lakers Summer League coach Dane Johnson said in James's Summer League debut on Saturday against the Kings, The number 55 pick in last month's draft scored 4 points on 2 of 9 shooting in 22 minutes of action. So certainly all the haters are out there already on Saturday's performance. He misses yesterday's game. Now we're knocking him for the injury, and the injury prone label is already out there. We'll see what's next in Wednesday's game. Bronny James, I would say, likely to play in that contest. And lastly, before we say goodbye, on to the ugly. Things have been very ugly lately across the board for the Arizona Cardinals. New coach last year, a lot of growing pains. I think they overperformed last year based on everything that they had going on. The Cardinals made major changes off the field before the 2022 season when they hired general manager and Minnesota native Monty Ossenfort and head coach Jonathan Gannon, and they've done a lot of roster alterations over the first 18 months or so on the job. One key veteran player that has remained on hand thinks those moves have the team heading in the right direction. During an appearance on the Rich Eisen Show last month, running back James Conner, according to Pro Football Talk at NBCSports.com, said that the Cardinals had too many players who were, quote, putting the team before themselves in the past, and the current regime has done a good job of making sure those people are no longer within the organization. You can look at who they let go. You can speculate all you want. James Conner has survived those cuts. He's back. He likes the team, likes the culture, likes the coaches. We'll see if it adds up to anything of note, but right now the Cardinals still buried out there in the NFC West cellar. That's the good, the bad, and the ugly here as we round out this Monday edition of Overtime. Thanks, as always, for being with us. Tomorrow on the show, Sioux Falls City Football Club will be hosting some playoff soccer. We'll look to chat with several players tomorrow on the show. Also, a full-fledged Wimbledon deep dive with one of our favorites, Kenny Ducey, who previews the weekend ahead, the storylines, and I'm going to ask him all about this Taylor Fritz performance, if he saw it coming, what it means for the sport, and the future of the American Star. Moving forward, we will talk to you on Tuesday, 11 to 1, right here on Overtime.